Fanboy Smackdown, episode number 36, Lucky You. Fanboy Smackdown. Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Tony.
And this is the Fanboy Smackdown podcast.
Episode 36.
36, yep. We're going to be talking about Lucky You tonight.
That's right.
We both saw it over the big opening weekend. The record-breaking opening weekend.
But not for Lucky You.
Actually, I think it did break a record. I think it broke a record for the lowest dollar amount taken in by a major market release on opening weekend.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that mainly happened because everyone in the free world who went to the theater was going to see Spider-Man.
Right.
Spider-Man 3. That was the numbers that came back on that is just phenomenal. But we'll get into that in a second. So how are things going with you, man?
Oh, they're going okay, man. Going pretty good. Yourself?
Going good. Going good. I got to see both of the new releases this weekend, and I'll be talking just a little bit about Spider-Man, but we'll dig into Lucky You. Also, I went to see Lucky You Friday night. And Julie and I went and saw Spider-Man on Saturday evening. We asked Holden if he wanted to see it, but the Black Spider-Man and the symbiote that you see in the commercial, kind of slithering over him and crawling over him, that just freaked him out too much. That was a little bit too much for him. he had absolutely no interest in seeing that one. So we made a grown-up night out of it. And,
cool.
We saw that Saturday night.
What'd you think about it?
Spider-Man?
Yeah.
I thought, you know, it's one of those things that after having seen Spider-Man 1 and Spider-Man 2, which are just phenomenal films, Spider-Man 2 is just... It's a great film. I think it's got some flaws, but I think Spider-Man 1 is a wonderful film, and it was you know one of the two big superhero movies that you know were kind of the 1-2 punch from Marvel with X-Men and Spider-Man that really brought the new wave of superhero films. To the point they're at now, and I think Spider-Man 3 kind of felt like X-Men 3 did after I walked out of it.
Interesting.
Not to the same extent. Not to the same extent. I was really disappointed in X-Men 3. Spider-Man 3 has some problems. Most of the problems I really feel were to the density of the story. There was just so much going on. There were so many parts of it that one of two things happened. Either there was Deus Ex Machina that this just happened to be right here so that we could advance the story, or they would make a huge leap in storytelling. And if you think about it for a while, you can kind of figure out how they got from point A to point B. But considering... this is supposed to be kind of a summer popcorn action flick. I think if they would have left... It's really tough for me to go here because it's... if it would have been a summer popcorn action flick, they left too much to the imagination of the audience. There were too many gaps in the storytelling. But... the story was so dense that it really wasn't a summer popcorn action flick. There was just a lot going on. And there were some scenes in it that just were out of place, that made you laugh when you shouldn't have. At least they did for me. And then there were a few points in the film that were just, they didn't make sense in the context of the story that came before it. And it's really hard for me to say any more than that without dropping some spoilers. So I'll leave it at that for now. And if, you know, when you get a chance to getting around to see it, maybe we'll talk about it here. Or maybe when the DVD release comes out, we can dig into it then. Or if somebody, you know, if somebody wants to talk about it on the side, shoot me an email, or shoot us an email, and I'll and I can kind of give you some of my thoughts on it. I don't want to spoil it for everybody though. All in all, I think if you are a fair weather fan of the films, if you've seen the first two films, you enjoyed them. Maybe you're not you don't own the DVD. Maybe you just, hey, you saw them in the theater and you really enjoyed them, or you rented them and you really liked them. I say go see it. It's, I mean, it is a fun movie. It's a darker movie, and visually, it's a beautiful film. It's a very, very pretty movie. That said, given the chance, I would say if you're interested in seeing it, I'll see it in the theater. It's worth the extra money for the visuals. It is a nice okay. looking picture. That said, also, it's kind of a side note, the theater that I went to, they've recently remodeled it, and about half the screens in the theater are now digital projection. And I get to see both of these films on digital projection. And I'll go into this a little more in the spoiler, when we get into the spoilers for Lucky You. But if you have the opportunity to see a film and you're given the choice between regular projection and digital, go digital. It's very nice. At least in our theater, the sound is wonderful. The image is great. I tell you, it's really funny to watch the opening of, you know, I don't know if all markets, the theaters are this way, but here in the St. Louis market, one of the major chains, and it's the, I think it's the oldest family-owned chain of theaters in North America. It's Werenberg Theaters, and they're the big theaters in our area. They've given us permission to interview at some of their theaters before, and they have a little graphic and some music that they play at the beginning of all their movies. Well, these little things are played so many times that they're scratched, there's pops, the sound's bad because they get played so often. It was really weird, and I didn't notice it so much the first time I saw it when I was watching Lucky You. I really noticed it the second night when I went and saw Spider-Man. Watching that and realizing that the transfer was flawless. There were no scratches, no pops. The images were pristine. The sound was crystal clear. That was kind of cool. It was something different. It was something different because you kind of get used to it.
But I really wouldn't want to see Lucky You on a digital screen. It's not that kind of film.
I'll get into that shortly.
Okay.
We'll get into that because it made for an interesting experience.
Okay. Cool.
But we'll get into that in just a little bit. So yeah, all in all, I was disappointed in Spider-Man. I didn't feel like I wasted the 2.5 hours seeing it. We'll probably end up purchasing it when it comes out on DVD. My hope is that some of the parts in the storytelling where I felt there were gaps and there were some sequences that felt a little rushed. Mm-hmm. My hope is that there are some scenes and sequences that were cut and that they may be added back in, or we'll see some deleted scenes that fill in those gaps. I heard a rumor at one point that some of the studios were really nervous about Grindhouse and how this, you know, 3 hour long movie basically failed expectations at the box office, and that they were cutting some of the longer movies that they have that they were coming out this summer, and one of those was Spider-Man 3. I heard a rumor that something like 15 to 20 minutes of the film was cut for this theatrical release. So if that's the case, there may be some of this criticism may be justified in that the studio might have ordered cuts that may have caused some problems in the storytelling.
That's so tragic if that's the case too, because Grindhouse is marketed to a very tiny crowd of people.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a completely different situation.
Yeah.
There's really no comparison in the situation.
It doesn't have the wide appeal that Spider-Man has, nor the moniker. You know, Spider-Man alone as a name is a huge franchise. It's
absolutely.
A complete... That's such a wrong call fundamentally on so many levels. Studios always do dumb things that butcher movies. I mean, I know Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid is not a great movie, but we talked about how the studio wanted to have cash on hand just to build their MGM Grand, so they put a poor cut out of it. I don't know. That stuff makes me mad. Let's fight the man. This podcast is all about fighting the man.
That's
it's
right.
The Man Boy Smackdown. That doesn't even make any sense.
Wait a minute. That's something completely different. I think we should also note that you are suffering from a little bit of congestion.
Generally...
Your voice is going to be a little bit off.
I have some mild asthma anyway, and a lot of whatever issues with breathing. But it's even worse now that the pollen and mold have gone up in the air. So if you think it was bad before, everybody, just get wait for this episode. I'm sure already you've heard it. You probably don't even you probably can't even hear my partner here. My God, I've just been breathing and sniffling and. It's crazy. I feel like Darth Vader, except without the suit.
We know it's coming, Ed. You don't need to let us know about the deep breathing again. So we're aware of it this time.
Yeah, exactly. So warning, disclaimer to everybody. You might want to put that in the show notes too.
let's dig into what the box office looked like this weekend.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've heard the numbers, but. It was quite skewed.
Well, I know Spider-Man 3, was the highest grossing for this particular weekend ever.
Yeah, it was. It's the highest grossing weekend ever. It broke records across the board. It's had the highest opening ever, the best Friday ever, the best Saturday, the best Sunday, quickest to 100 million. Best worldwide release, because worldwide it made some ridiculous amount of over 200 million worldwide. I believe we're talking somewhere in the range of. I would bet we're recording this on Wednesday. I haven't checked the numbers. I would bet worldwide we're probably talking that the film has already made easily over 400 million. Worldwide, but the opening weekend in the U.S. the initial reports that I was hearing, even on like Monday morning, was it made 145 million.
Wow.
The adjusted gross after I guess they went back and checked 151.1 million. It had the largest theater count ever, 4,200 screens. 4,200 theaters, 10,000 screens.
Wow.
The average theater took in $35,000. Most films, if they take in 2,000 to 3,000 per screen, that's they're doing really well. Some of the independent, you know, New York only kind of. You know, maybe they have one theater in New York, one theater in L.A. playing it. Those movies, sometimes you can see $5,000 and $6,000 weekends because that's the only place you could go to see that movie. 35,000 average per theater.
That's amazing.
It's phenomenal. It's pretty spectacular. And this next weekend, I don't believe there's anything coming up this next weekend that is really a strong threat to the box office numbers. Now, the weekend after that, let's see, this weekend would be the 11th through the 13th. The following weekend is when Shrek 3 comes out. And I believe a week or two after that is when Pirates 3 comes out. So, Spider-Man's got some money to make early off, because I have a feeling that, you know, we'll start seeing some competitive numbers once those other films come out, and some strong drop-offs. But yeah, it had a good, strong opening weekend, and an amazingly strong one. Now, keep in mind that number, $151 million. The second place movie, Disturbia, which finally got knocked off of its number one spot, $5.8 million.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, everyone was going to spend their money on one movie this weekend, so.
They did. I mean, it's across the board. Every movie dropped this weekend. Number three, Fracture. Actually, it moved up, because it was in fourth place last weekend, so it moved up to third place. But basically, it didn't have... It was a product of the numbers. It didn't drop off as much as The Invisible did. And that had... let's see. The Fracture had 3.7 million, and Invisible had 3.2 million. So
The Invisible, I didn't see that.
It's just Fractures. Yeah, it's just fractures, or fractions of the, you know, $2 and $3 million from here on out. In fifth place was Next, which we have a review of that on the website. We also have a review of Spider-Man 3 on the website, a text review of that. So if you're interested in one of our reviewers' opinions on it, we do have that out there as well. Next pulled in $2.9 million. Lucky You, the movie that we're committed to reviewing this evening, came in at sixth place opening weekend.
Which means we're just going to have a whole bunch of listeners for this episode, I can feel it.
Yeah. I think we'll have as many listeners for this episode as people who saw it.
Probably.
In theaters.
Yeah.
It's
at least you, me, and, you know, Eric Bana.
Yeah. Yeah,
Eric Bana, if you're out there, I'm sorry.
Let's see. Meet the Robinsons was in 7. Blades of Glory is still in the top 10.
Yes.
Still hanging in.
Blades of Glory almost outpaced Lucky You's opening.
What's interesting is that Blades of Glory fell below Meet the Robinsons. This is the first time they came out on the same weekend. And this is the first time that they fell below Meet the Robinsons. But there's really not another family-friendly kids-type movie out.
Right.
So Meet the Robinsons is the fare until Shrek comes out, basically.
Right. When does Shrek come out?
I believe it's not this weekend, but the following. It's the... I believe it's the 18th. I'd have to look that up, and I'm sure if I'm wrong, I will be corrected. But tell you what, I'll go ahead and make sure that it's in the show notes, just so somewhere we are right.
True. Have the genie fix it.
Yeah, there you go. Let's see. In 9th was Hot Fuzz, and in 10th, still in 10th, Cube.
Yes.
He's still hanging in.
Cube stays alive.
Man, still there, still hanging in. But yeah, so that's what we're looking at. It looks like a couple of these films, especially it looks like Blades of Glory and Are We Done Yet, lost almost 1,000 theaters each this week. Which I would bet most of them went to Spider-Man 3.
Right.
It's That's pretty significant drop-offs for the number of theaters they had initially to what they've got now. What I'm really kind of surprised at by looking at these numbers, though, is that I would have expected there to be a little more spillover into some of the other films. I know sometimes the logic is that, you know, you put another either not a similar movie, but a movie that can be at least a fair comparison to a big box office opening film. And if people can't get into that one, then they go see something else. But I know, like, at our local theater, it's a 15-screen theater. We also have a 10-screen theater just 3 miles down the road.
Right.
So 25 screens with and all from the same franchise within a relatively close area. I believe I did not go to the 10 screen, so I'm not sure how many of those screens were playing Spider-Man 3.
Probably 8.
But I know at the 15-screen theater, it had to have been at least 4 of the screens were Spider-Man 3. It was... I don't think they went more than an hour between start times of Spider-Man 3 all weekend long.
That's amazing.
It's very amazing.
But as the alternative podcast, we didn't decide to cover Spider-Man 3 this weekend.
Right, yeah. But, that's the choice we take.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's the choice we take. Everybody and their brother's talking about Spider-Man 3.
That's what I felt. I mean,
if you want some similar opinions, to tell you what, I said I wouldn't spoil it for anyone, and I won't. But if you do want to hear some of the spoilerific kind of talk about Spider-Man, I would suggest checking out the Geek Label podcast. Their episode this week, which I listened to just earlier today, they went and saw Spider-Man 3. They talk about it in depth, and they pretty much lay out all the problems that I had with the movie. I think they're a little more hard on the movie than I was. Not that I don't think their criticisms are any less valid. I just think that I didn't take those critiques as personally as they seem to.
Right.
They got pretty fired up about how they felt about it.
So, I'm sure a lot of people will be fired up on both sides about it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and you know, the screening we went to of Spider-Man 3 was sold out. And as was when I went to the theater Friday night, every screening, I went to a 9:50 showing of Lucky You, and every screening of Spider-Man, with the exception of the 10 a.m. and the 10:30 a.m., was sold out, and there was an 11:30 and a 12 p.m. showing that had not sold out. Granted, it was still an hour and a half till those showings.
Right.
So, my assumption is that they did end up selling out before that point, because when I left the theater, there was an inordinate amount of people kind of milling around getting popcorn and soda, obviously going in to see Spider-Man, considering some of the t-shirts that I saw them wearing and things like that.
Right.
So, a lot of people are going to be talking about this. We've chosen the alternative road, and we're going to be talking about Lucky You.
And I got to say, just to open with, I love most of Curtis Hanson's movies.
Right.
He did The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, which is a pretty good movie.
Yes, it is.
But then he gets really good. He does The River Wild, L.A. Confidential, Wonder Boys, and 8 Mile. A string of fantastic movies.
I have not seen 8 Mile. I can't say that I've seen 8 Mile. I've seen the rest of them, and I'm a fan. I do enjoy those movies.
They're all great movies. They're all different movies. And
yeah, very different movies.
Yeah, he does completely different genres. And Wonder Boys is one of my favorite comedies of all time. And L.A. Confidential is one of the great noirs of recent years.
That is a wonderful film.
River Wild is a top-notch outdoors thriller. You know, yep. Which is its own kind of thriller. It's man versus man, but it's also man versus nature when you got a thriller like that.
Right.
And an 8 Mile, which is, you know, it's a romanticizing of Eminem's life, but it's still a good movie. It's an excellent movie.
I just haven't seen that one yet, so I really can't speak to that one. But
well, I mean, it's,
and I know that there is a lot of love for that film, though. I know a lot of people enjoy that one.
It is pretty much what you'd expect it to be. It's a Rocky type movie.
Yeah,
we like the Rockies, so
absolutely.
I think you would like it. I really do.
All right.
And it's well written, and Eminem plays down his harsher tones. He's actually a pretty good actor.
I'm not a fan of Eminem, and I'm not a fan of rap, so I was kind of avoiding it for those reasons. And I know that's probably not the most valid reasons for avoiding a film. I'm aware of that, but those
well, are my reasons. I'm not a huge Eminem fan either. I think he's done a lot. He's done the most for the genre since Public Enemy, in my opinion. And I'm sure rap fans will probably smack me down, you know, in the next...
Oh, probably.
Yeah, they're probably typing their emails right now. But, Eminem, you know, regardless of what you think about Eminem, the story is good and he's good in it. I think he dropped off the face of the earth. I don't know what he's done, you know, in a while, but... Maybe he and Public Enemy, you know, who dropped off the face of the earth as well. Maybe they're drinking pina coladas with, Tupac Shakur, who apparently faked his death and all that. So, anyway, lucky you, which Curtis Hanson always picks out good music for his movies.
Mm-hmm.
And the... trailer that sold me was the one that had Bruce Springsteen's Lucky Town in it, and it was about poker and all that, and I was like, oh, I bet this will be a good movie. So we went and saw it, and I'm happy that I saw it. It was a good date movie, but overall I was pretty disappointed based on what I've come to expect from Curtis Hanson, the director.
Right.
And it's also deceptive in that it's not really about his relationship with the girl. It's really a father-son movie. It's really about the father and the son.
I mentioned this to a few people before I went and saw it, that I thought that this film may end up suffering a little bit from the same thing that the breakup did, in that I think it was mismarketed.
Yeah.
I think it was, and maybe not even mismarketed so much as that the story that they were presenting to us through the trailers and through the advertising, it was just misleading.
But
they seemed to portray it as a romantic, you know, as more of a romantic story, with, you know, almost a romantic comedy in one of the trailers I saw for it. And there was not. I mean, it was absolutely not a romantic comedy.
And Drew Barrymore is wasted. It's a shame because she's really great in most of her films. I mean, she's a pretty good comedian. And she's absolutely wasted. In fact, I think I saw more of her in E.T. than I did in this movie.
Oh, easily.
So, you know. It was
and you probably saw more acting from her in E.T. than
probably
in this one also, and you know, nothing against her. I mean, there just really wasn't anything there for her.
She had to read, you know, cheesy idealistic lines, you know, which defined her character, but she was not a three-dimensional character, and that was really a crime. I just, you know, to have someone that talented play a two-dimensional cliche, you know, character. It was really disappointing.
Yeah. You know, I think for this portion of it, the review portion, the non-spoiler portion, the best critique of this movie I can give is I went into this movie expecting something similar to The Color of Money.
Yeah.
And in that, I was not disappointed.
Right.
It felt... And I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen The Color of Money, so I know that there are differences in the story and the structure, but it felt like a spiritual remake of Color of Money, take out the pool, add in the poker.
But not quite as good.
Yeah, not
a little
not
more predictable. Well, I mean, Color of Money was directed by Scorsese, so
right,
gonna have a hard time topping that.
Yeah, but especially for you.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm biased, but and Robert Duvall was really great, but he's no Paul Newman. No. But you know, I think the big difference for me was that yeah, it's no Color of Money, but you compared it to The Breakup, and I would say it's not even The Breakup. In no. that The Breakup was a great movie that was reviewed poorly.
Yes,
and
it
this was an okay movie that was reviewed poorly. And really, anyone who reviewed it poorly, I can't blame them. I mean, I think they were a little harsh on it, but it wasn't that great. I mean,
it really wasn't a great film. I mean, I felt kind of the same way I felt about Spider-Man 3, in that I was not. I don't feel like my time was wasted. I was disappointed. But I don't feel my time was wasted. And it's... I'm not unhappy that I saw the film. I'm not... You know, I don't feel like I wasted my time with it. But it's not one that I can very strongly recommend people rushing out to see. This is the kind of movie that I would say, if you're flipping around on some lazy Saturday afternoon and you've got HBO and it's on, and you know,
it did
you're
feel
not a sports fan, so you're not really interested in seeing the golf match or the baseball game, you'll probably want to watch it and you'll probably enjoy it for that kind of experience.
It really did feel like one
of
those movies.
I would not go out of my way and look for it, though,
that you'd find on a Sunday afternoon at 2 on network television.
Yeah.
And that if you saw it on network television,
because
it would not be disappointing
been,
at all. It would be like...
No, because a game has been, you know, rain delayed or something, so they threw this on there.
Right, right. Not bad, but yeah, certainly
I mean,
not what I expected out of it, which...
No.
And I was kind of... I was excited about this movie. Not that I'd been waiting for it for months or anything, but when I saw the trailer for it, and it was a Curtis Hanson movie, and it's kind of, you know, like a seedy, it's a seedy, you know, gambler's, you know, paradise, and but he falls in love, and you know, hey, I'll fall for that every time. I mean, that's a good, you know, plot, you know, to use, but it just wasn't there. It was too safe.
No.
Something about it was very safe. I think none of the characters were that bad. I mean, not to give too much away, but I mean, Eric Bana's character does some things that aren't good. But
let's go ahead and just let's wrap the review portion right now.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and go into the promo, then we'll go ahead and dig into it, because there's a lot I want to talk about, but it's spoiler stuff. So if people are really interested in seeing this, I don't want to ruin it for them.
Right.
So let's go ahead and we've got a promo for a friend of mine who is a co-host on the Sci-Fi Smackdown podcast with me. So let's go ahead and listen to this.
All right.
The world is changed. I feel it in the internet. I smell it in the podosphere. Much that once was is lost. And good riddance.
Okay, enough of that melodramatic garbage. I'm Nina Kimberly the Merciless, star of the award-nominated podcast novel by Christiana Ellis. I am not a damsel in distress. I do not wear a chainmail bikini, and I do kill people. But you don't have to take my word for it. I also bully people into saying nice things about me.
Hi, this is Mer Lafferty from Geek Foo Action Grip. Nina Kimberly is a cross between Robin McKinley and Terry Pratchett. You've got a kick-ass heroine in situations that are absolutely bizarre and hysterical.
Hi, this is T. Morris, the patio books Moravi, The Chronicles of Rafe and Nascana, and Billabub Battings in the Case of the Singing Sword. I think the best way to describe Nina Kimberly the Merciless, it's The Princess Bride if Monty Python wrote it, because it features a dragon with big, sharp, pointy teeth.
Hi everyone, it's Evo Terra. As you may know, I'm not a big fan of fantasy. However, I truly enjoyed Nina Kimberly the Merciless. Funny, snarky, and action-packed. Oh, that all fantasy was written like this.
See? It's good. So why don't you go subscribe at patiobooks.com or at ninakimberly.com, and we can avoid any unfortunate misunderstandings. That's Nina Kimberly the Merciless by Christiana Ellis. Subscribe or die. Either way is fine with me.
Okay, we're back.
We are back.
And let's go ahead and say that from here on out, if you're not interested in getting some of the more spoilerific points of this movie, you might want to stop listening now. And we will see you next time.
There's not much to spoil.
Well, not really, no. But our next episode is going to be our Mother's Day special. It's coming out after Mother's Day, but we're doing something a little special to honor our
mothers. That's right.
Yes. And we won't say anything more than that. But if you've heard some of our other special holiday editions, you might have an idea of what's coming up. So lucky you. So did you feel real lucky about this?
No, I really didn't feel lucky or unlucky. It just was, it was just kind of there.
Yeah, it was really weird. It just kind of exists, and it's there. And I just felt that they had some opportunities to make some really interesting and clever choices, and they didn't.
Right.
I think the character, Huck Cheever, which is Huckleberry, at one point his dad calls him, which then they mentioned that his dad was an English professor, so you kind of get the idea of where the name comes from.
Right.
But...
an English professor turned two-time world poker champion.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that this movie's made up of.
Right.
It's just really bizarre things, and it's... And they make it. They make a big point of setting it in 2003. I guess right before the big poker phenomena hits, with televised poker, and you know they make a big point of talking about that this is the first time the cameras are being used, and they go out of their way on some of this stuff.
I think it is a perhaps pet project of the director. I don't know that for a fact.
Yeah.
But that his
interesting. What I was going to say is, and this is going to jump right into the end of the movie, spoiler. I thought it was really interesting that they made the point of telling us about the cameras that were being used, and that Huck was purposefully hiding his cards from the camera. Because that actually plays into the last of the hands that he plays.
Right.
And it's important that you know that he's hiding his cards.
Right.
So I thought, you know, that is one of those moments of brilliance that they actually did think it through all the way. That could have been a big plot hole.
Yep.
They actually patched it. You know,
it's not really...
It was all there.
Full of any holes. It's just kind of...
there.
It doesn't take any risks.
Really kind of
so
there.
There's not a lot of holes. I mean,
no. And I mean, they do. I mean, they do some of this stuff that's, you know, part of Las Vegas lore. The guy who will gamble on anything, so he gets breast implants and then ends up living in the bathroom. I mean, it was like, yeah, that was interesting, but
Well, it was funny. It was funny.
Yeah, but one of the tenets of storytelling would be that at some point that would play into the grander scheme, and it really didn't. You know, I mean, it just felt like wasted material. The sequence where he meets Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
You know, completely out of the blue. I didn't have a clue that he was in this movie.
And he's only in it once.
And he's in it once.
You never
and
see him again.
And this is the kind of, but it's the kind of character that you might see him come back to at some point, and he just, it just lays there.
Yeah, I didn't understand that either. I was very puzzled by that.
I mean, there's some things. I mean, it's just, and it's full of little moments like that you're kind of half expecting for it to come up and play some role later on in the film, and it doesn't. That scene exists for exactly what you see it for. He's trying to get money from this guy. The guy says, no, I'm not going to give you money, and he leaves. Yeah. That's it. That's the only part of that story. It just seemed really wasted on Robert Downey Jr.
There's, you know? And I mean, the metaphors in the conversation are clear, but why did you need Robert Downey Jr. to tell you that?
Exactly. I mean, exactly.
I don't understand.
I mean, it's
and
sets
if he's
up,
the greatest actor of our generation, why is he playing 5-minute bit roles like that?
Right, right.
So,
yeah, it's
and I like the guy, really, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, you know. it's this is a weird film. You know, I thought it was really funny because I mean, knowing that this movie is marketed kind of as a date movie or even as a chick flick in some cases, I was the only person in our theater that was not with someone.
Really?
Yeah. There were 9 people in our theater.
Right. There were even less than ours.
There were 4 couples and me. And one of the couples was 2 women, and they may have been a couple. I don't know. Maybe they're just friends seeing the film. But
we at the Fanboy Smackdown are open to that sort of thing.
Hey,
it's okay.
I got no problem with that.
Amen.
It's... Yeah, this movie was just really odd.
Well, like Karen...
Interestingly enough...
Karen was interested in the first half, but then during the second half, she got bored and I think drifted off to sleep, I think even. You know, which...
You know,
who could blame her? She went to see a romantic comedy and
it
had nothing to do with it. You know,
this is an interesting point that I was going to bring up. This movie... could end up being in I think that this movie could go down in Fanboy Smackdown lore as the perfect date movie.
As the perfect date movie?
Yes, because it has romantic elements to it. It has something that is remotely male in the poker. But poker's cross gender. There's nothing inherently male or female in card playing. But the movie plods along at such a pace that you can literally stop watching, make out for a while, go back to watching the film, and you haven't missed anything. Really.
Yeah, really. I mean,
especially during the
true.
Poker sequences.
That's true.
You know,
it's a good point. It also coincidentally is probably the lowest rated film in Fanboy Smackdown podcasting history.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's just a weird flick, man. I really have not a whole lot more to say about it.
I'll tell you what the best part was, the end. When Bob Dylan's new song came on, I had no idea he was coming out with a new song. I was so happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
This ties in with last week's show. This
right.
is the lesser of the two movies we reviewed in which Bob Dylan features a prominent musical role in the film.
Right, right. You know, one of the things that I thought was rather interesting about the main character, Huck Cheever, was that he continues to make bad choices.
Right.
That was one of the things that I think they did right in the film, is that there were times that he could have made the right choice and it would have been a good thing, and And I think it would have helped the pacing of the movie. I think it would have moved the movie along a little quicker. But he continues to make the bad choice, and it continues to drag the story out a little more.
And his luck runs out in a way. Like, yeah. They made a point of that he was unlucky in a lot of ways. With the bad burn on that one card,
right.
With the Horatio Sands moment, which actually was pretty funny. I liked that scene with the golf course and all that.
Yes, but that was good.
That he generally was running out of luck, and not that it was connected with his choices directly, but in a karma kind of way, the choices he was making was affecting his, you know, finally affecting the professional area of his life, where where he always kind of relied on his luck as a shoot from the hip, you know, type guy.
Exactly.
And that's a good life lesson. I don't mind that. I mean, I've seen movies about it before, and they were better. So it's not a big deal. Right. But it was.
Yeah. And I think the point of the movie, I was fairly forgiving of the movie until the absolute last two or three lines of dialogue. And, you know, and this is going to be big old spoilers for it. You know, they make a point about two thirds of the way through the movie of saying how he and his dad used to play for nickels, dimes, and quarters on the kitchen table, and or pennies, nickels, and dimes, or something like that on the kitchen table, and that, you know, that was the big deal, and you always play with your left pocket money, which is the money that you're or that you don't play with that because that's what you're not willing to lose.
Right.
And the movie is very much about the relationship between him and his father, and how strained it is. I really liked that part of the story.
Well, yeah, that's the strongest part.
That is, I mean, that's obviously what the story was about. That was very well done. It was very strong. If they would have cut out the rest of the crap that tried to make it romantic at all,
right,
and it would have been like 45 minutes long, I think it would have been brilliant.
It's not a romantic movie.
No, it's not a romantic movie. They forced romantic elements into it. They strong-armed romantic elements into it. It's a two-hour-long flick that really could have stood to be 90 minutes long at the most.
Yep.
There are just some long sequences with the poker.
And you know what? If it were 90 minutes, we might be sitting here having a different conversation about the movie.
Absolutely. I absolutely think you're right. This movie, I think, could have stood for some more cuts. It plods. Another problem I had with let me get back to the point I was going to try and make, though, was the last bit of dialogue. He plays his dad again, and they make a point of the dad getting the nickels, dimes, and quarters. So you know that that's what they're going to be playing for.
Right.
Then the next sequence you see is Eric Bana's character and Drew Barrymore's character, and he goes to her and he shows her the handful of money. And if he would have just done that,
that would have been enough.
That would have been fine. But then he has to say, you know, she has to say, "Oh, you won. You beat your dad. And look, it's all nickels, dimes, and quarters." It's like,
duh.
Why? Other than to actually give her, you know, to actually double her dialogue throughout the movie. I mean, it was silly. I mean, and there were a couple of points where the conversations were like that, where they just felt the need to over-explain the obvious.
Yeah.
I thought that there were some really big inconsistencies, though, in the poker sequences, and it really started to bug me after a while.
Truthfully, I wasn't paying that close attention at that point, so I...
Well, and it was, I think the point that I was, that bugged me was that early on in the film, the way they do exposition, I mean, there were two major ways that they did exposition, which is mainly the whole point of Drew Barrymore's character.
Right.
was so that he could explain the game of poker to her, the newbie, which is in turn explaining it to the audience. But
and then he could also explain his relationship with his father.
Exactly. But he also does this thing where he turns to a poker player and basically dresses him down and explains, this is what I'm seeing in you, and this is why you're playing the way you are. And it's a way to show the audience that this character is really good at reading people. That's his gift, is that he's gifted at reading people and knowing, you know, how they're going to play the cards. He understands the rules and the statistics and the people that play.
But there's a fundamental inconsistency in that.
There is, because there's huge sequences where
he's telling it aloud.
Yeah, he's telling it aloud, and then he wins big.
Right.
Then you see huge sequences where he's not doing that, and he's kicking ass and winning all kinds of money, not saying a word.
Right.
And at one point, it looks like it's an ego thing, but if it was an ego thing, he'd be doing it more consistently, and it's not. So
right.
It's, I mean, it's really, it's off in that
It is
respect.
A little off. I don't think they knew the characters well enough.
No. I think you're right. I think you're right in that.
And, you know, whatever. It's a okay movie. It's not horrible.
Yeah.
I wouldn't explicitly recommend. I'd say if you want to rent it with your girlfriend, that's cool.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go see it in the theater, and I wouldn't. Take any extra time to seek it out.
You know, this is the kind of movie that this will be the kind of movie that I'm going to recommend for Valentine's Day.
There you go.
You know, get this movie, say, hey, baby, Drew's in it.
Although,
I like Drew Barrymore. It's kind of a romantic comedy. Eric Bana, he's kind of a cute guy. Let's check this flick out. We'll pop some corn, sit on the couch, cuddle up under a blanket. We'll watch the movie.
Although if you tell your girlfriend that Eric Bana is kind of a cute guy, you might end up having an entirely different conversation.
Well, you don't
not just
say
kidding.
That you're proposing
I know,
it that
I'm
way.
Just teasing.
You're playing to her femininity there.
Then again, if you say, "Wow, Drew Barrymore is really hot," let's go see this movie. You might also end up having an entirely different conversation.
Exactly. But the beautiful thing is you know, you can watch this movie. You can take breaks during this movie while you're watching it, not have to worry about pausing it.
Right. Right. It's kind of like watching golf.
Yeah. Golf is great for watching on a Sunday afternoon, because you can, like, take a two-hour-long nap and wake up and not have missed anything.
Right.
It's great.
Love I want to say one good thing about this movie, though.
The music.
The music was awesome. Curtis Hanson
See,
always picks good music.
I knew you were going there because of the Springsteen and the Dylan.
And there was even a Leonard Cohen song in there. It was great.
Yeah.
The whole thing
was
great. But actually, what I was really going to say was it is effective in that if it's introducing poker to a new audience, it does a good job. Because Karen didn't know anything about poker.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day, she wanted to learn how to play. So we ended up playing poker
afternoon.
And
awesome.
Yeah.
That's
cool. And so, like, if it wasn't for that movie, she wouldn't have even cared about poker.
Right.
But
right.
after she watched the scenes where Eric Bana's telling Drew Barrymore, well, now I'm going to do this and this and this, you know, she was like, that was interesting. She's like, I think it would be neat to learn how to play. So now we're going to play a lot, and that seemed like pretty cool. We're playing for nickels,
That's
dimes,
cool.
and quarters, of course.
of course.
so,
cool.
But that was one good side effect of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to truly rip on this movie. It's not a horrible movie.
Well, it's too good-natured, and
yeah,
to really say, well, this is a bad movie. I mean, it's got some moments,
and it didn't really take itself seriously enough.
No, it didn't.
I mean, there were enough comedic elements that you can't really rip on it. It wasn't. You know, it wasn't a movie that's so over the top trying to take itself seriously, like, this is a serious study of poker and the psychological effects of the people who are playing it. No, I mean, at one point, one of the really funny points in the movie is when the guy who will do anything for a bet walks up and is talking to Huck. And Drew Barrymore's character is sitting there, and she looks over, and yeah. she's eye level with this dude with breasts at least as big as hers.
Right.
And she's just – the funniest point is that she is just staring. I mean, just flat out staring at this guy's breasts. And it's the look on her face. I mean, that was one of the few points in this movie where it seemed like she really got to act.
Right.
And she really played up that moment. There were some moments like that where they were kind of funny. And I think you hit it on the head that it was just a little too good-natured to really rip on the movie.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think. I mean, it's just, you know, a lighthearted movie, you know. So.
Yeah. It was lighthearted. Ultimately, I think it'd be pretty forgettable.
Oh, yeah. I don't even remember what we were talking about.
Yeah. What movie was that?
What movie are we talking about?
Spider-Man 3, isn't it? Oh, wait, you didn't see that one.
What is it? Spider-Man 3, you said? I didn't hear what you just said there.
Yeah, Spider-Man 3.
I haven't seen Spider-Man 3. I guess I'm going to have to at some point.
You know what? I think knowing what you... Knowing what I know about your film taste, I think ultimately you'll be disappointed in it. I think you'll be left wanting more.
Yeah.
The one shining good of this movie is Thomas Hayden Church. His portrayal of Flint Marko Sandman is really, really well done. I thought the story was a little bit off, but that does not take away from his portrayal. Some of the stuff they made him say and do is a little off. just in, you know, if you think about it too hard, it kind of makes your head hurt.
Right.
But there's a sequence where, there's no spoiler to this. I mean, he becomes Sandman. And basically, at the moment he becomes Sandman, he is a loose pile of sand.
Nice.
And the sequence where you see him building himself back from the core component of sand into a human again is really cool. It's just a really cool moment. And from the way I've heard that it was done, I don't know that it could have been done any other way than how it was done, in that he actually acted it out.
Huh.
And that they built the special effects around him. And this is not something that is purely CGI. It's... The CGI effects are obvious, but I mean, you just couldn't do this stuff practically. But you just have to see that scene. That sequence alone is, for me, was absolutely worth the price of admission. It's really powerful.
Wow. Wow.
So I have to give it big props for that.
It's an $8 scene.
For other points of disappointments. Yeah, for other points of disappointment in the film, I really did like that moment. But
Dude, so. I think we've pretty much run the gamut here.
Yeah, we killed this one.
Lucky us. Yeah. Oh man, that's horrible.
Lucky you people, because now you don't have to suffer through it.
That's true. That's true.
All right, so. Yeah, we'll see you next time for the Mother's Day special.
Absolutely.
And as always, you can reach us, can send us an email, fanboysmackdown@gmail.com. Catch us on the forum, farpointforums.com. Leave comments. We got a lot of people commenting now. Our comment count seems to be heading back up in the last couple of weeks, which is really great. We're getting a lot of good comments from from Stu and Ed, and Darren's been chiming in quite a bit. So very cool. And definitely check out Darren and Josh's reviews. These guys are putting in our couple of minutes of talking about the movies is nothing compared to some of the really well written.
They work way harder than we do. That's for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely, dude. We just turn on the mic, grab a couple of beers, and go.
Yeah.
So it's they're doing a phenomenal job, and I can't say enough about the work they're putting in on that.
Absolutely.
So. Definitely drop them some comments. Let us know what you think of the reviews. And hey, if there's anything else you want to see us talk about, either new movies, old movies, drop us a note, and maybe we'll talk about it on the podcast. Maybe we'll pass it on to Josh and Darren and see if they want to comment about it in a review. So or hell, maybe the four of us will do something all together sometime too.
Yeah.
Or you can, we haven't had any voicemail lately. So
send us a voicemail.
Yep. 206-339 FBSD. 206-339-3273. And I'm always on Skype. You can catch that at Fanboy Smackdown on Skype. There's another social networking site that I've been kind of playing around with called Twitter, and it's basically it's kind of a short messaging service. You can kind of let people know what you're doing at any moment, and it's everybody can see it. If you're on Twitter, you can look up Tony Mast on Twitter. That's just all one word altogether. That's the way I'm listed on Twitter, and but there they refer to me as Tony Smackdown. So
very cool.
And let's see, anything else? Oh, if you're in the St. Louis area, this next weekend coming up, I believe it's the 19th, or is it the 18th? It's the 18th, Friday the 18th. There is going to be Fear the Boot. The guys over at the Fear the Boot podcast, they're local also. They're doing their second worldwide wing night, where they invite all their fans to get together and have wings and drink beer.
Woohoo!
And yeah, I'm going to be joining them for that over at that one place. So if you're in the St. Louis area and you want to join us for Worldwide Wing Night, send an email and we can get you all the info on that also. Or if you want to come to St. Louis for it, there's going to be it's going to be quite a show. Got a lot of folks getting together to have wings and drink beer. And if you want to join in the spirit of it, you don't have to travel. You can just go out to your local place of wingage and get some wings and have a cold one and. Drop a note and let us know that you did it on the 18th of May is when they're doing their second one. So, I think that's about it. I think I'm done pimping stuff for the moment.
Sweet. Well, I hope everybody has a good week, and, yep. and we will see you. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers.
Exactly.
And, peace out.
See ya.
Subscribe or die. Either way is fine with me.